Good morning, this is News 12 Breakfast with Ciara Kelly. It's Tuesday, the 21st of February. On the show this morning, an attempted hack on Virgin Media TV may disrupt programming. We're going to hear from government and opposition on the new cost of living package, and our own Sean Moncrief will be reporting from Ukraine.
We decided to go to Kyiv because we were tired from constant shelling and risky about our kids, of course.
Also coming up, condemnation of attack on Garda after Ballyfermot funeral, celebrity chef Clodagh McKenna on Pancake Tuesday, and how using hotels to accommodate refugees may be sacrificing our tourism sector.
We'll have huge damaging unintended consequences if the number of refugees and asylum seekers continues to grow in the accommodation sector, and it's going to have a big impact, a big negative impact next summer.
In sport, Liverpool welcome Real Madrid to Anfield in the Champions League, while Johnny Sexton emerges as a doubt for Ireland against Italy this weekend. All that and more, but first with the morning headlines, here's Shane Beattie.
On 106 to 108 FM, on the News Talk app, powered by Go Loud and Smart Speaker. This is News Talk.
It's 7 o'clock, good morning. Welfare recipients will get a €200 payment.
In Mykolaiv region, it was constantly shelling. It was artillery range, and the sounds of war was always with us all day. And children used to it. They automatically lay down on the ground when they hear that something really big and dangerous when they were in Mykolaiv. So they were not scary there. But when we come to Kyiv, and for example, on New Year, their dad go to have a walk with kids. And there was attack also on the day of New Year. And when at that moment my kids heard the sound of rockets, they scared. And the smallest one of my sons, he sleeps with anxiety and with worry because they little bit far away now from like front line, and here they affected by this even more in silent place.
Do you do you have family there still where you came from, and would your children have friends still there, and would they worry about them?
Yeah, so my mom and mom of my husband, they are still there. My brother living there. Now it's a little bit calmer than it was before, but again it's still too near to the front line, and when there is a siren, air siren, we know that rockets and maybe some drones, they are flying under the head of our relatives there.
Do your children ever ask you, when can we go home again?
Yes, my kids are asking me, but we don't think that we will come back. Why? Because there is no job there anymore, and there is a small amount of not so much businesses in the city who are left, and there is no possibility to work and to earn money anymore because of war. That's why we with husband decided to stay here in Kyiv. It's also the reason why we are staying here, and we don't think we will be able to come back there. I also have my 23-year-old daughter, so I have three kids. She also here in Kyiv. I try to find work here at now moment. I couldn't find, but I try. I think we will stay here.
I genuinely can't believe what I'm hearing. That €11 billion package, which was distributed over once-off measures and more permanent spending, that somehow wasn't adequate. The reason that they, as Jed well knows from a macroeconomic perspective, that you do once-off measures is once because it gets the money to people quickly, but it also doesn't bank it into the system indefinitely in terms of sustainability of the public finances. We have tried to produce sustainable public finances in the long term, which has meant that we have had packages like €11 billion to provide support to people. This is just unbelievable.
What about
from
Jed's
the
point,
party.
Though? If you're on 25 grand, you'll be better off by the tune of 16 measures, euros, and you're on 100 measures, grand, you're better off by 100 euros.
The measures across the board were about providing support to everybody, about providing support through tax changes, about reducing prices at the petrol pump, about providing support to everybody, and also making significant additional payments to people at the most in the most vulnerable areas, whether they were lone parents, whether they were working families, extra payments to carers, extra payments for people who are the most vulnerable, and permanent increases in social welfare rates. We have a whole economy to look after. Just because you're working doesn't mean you're immune from the cost of living pressures. Just because you're working doesn't mean that the prices are any different for you than anybody else. And we need to provide supports to everybody. And that we don't have any cliff edges. We need to provide supports to businesses. Why? I don't hear Jed talking about that. Because businesses maintain employment links.
Okay.
That's what we did with employment wage subsidy. That's what we're trying to do with TBEZ, with the energy support scheme.
Okay,
that's
why
we're trying to do that better.
We'll let Jed answer.
I can't believe
we'll let Jed answer. Jed, why don't you care about business or the squeeze middle?
I do, and it's why I get up in the morning, is to make sure we have a functioning economy, but an economy that works for everybody. We don't have enough discussion in this country about the number of people who are actually working, but are also experiencing severe poverty. That's why we thought that the minimum wage increase was inadequate in itself. We know that we're on a pathway to a living wage, and there's a dispute about how that's calculated.
If all of these things are inadequate, though, 11 billion euros was the package in October, 1.25 billion. How much would Labour like to see spent?
Yeah, we actually said initially, I think we were first out of the traps to say that it should be a 4 billion euro package. We would have spent about 2.5 billion.
4 billion today.
4 billion euro between September and Christmas into the new year in terms of the once-off measures. But we actually would have spent about 2.5 billion euro more and identified how we would actually raise that, because we know that the... We've spoken about a series of wealth taxes. We spoke as well about reducing a series of very expensive reliefs that actually don't really benefit everybody, that really should be reviewed annually, and are only reviewed after a period of years. The big issue that we have in this country at the moment, I think, is about, you know, we've a two-tier economy. People are doing really, really well, and that's really good. You know, we've got a strong economy, but you can't eat good GDP figures.
And most importantly, and finally, JD, sweet or savoury?
Oh, it's got to be sweet.
Yeah, me too.
It's got to be sweet. It is a weird
I don't really get the savoury thing at all.
No, it's almost like you're cheating if you do that. You're doing the wrong
thing.
We're
talking pancakes here, everybody.
Yeah, it's a weird feeling. It's my favourite food. Whatever's in them, it's almost like I'm injecting serotonin into my body. I've never done illegal drugs, but I have to say, eating lemon and sugar pancakes is the closest thing I'll ever get to. Like, I literally could have 10 pancakes right now.
Right now.
Maple syrup is also another option.
Do you know what I still think? And I've seen people say caster sugar and icing. No, actually gritty, granular. Like, I want the pancakes of my youth. That's
yes,
what I want.
Yes.
The ones that are slightly crispy at the edge, all soft and kind of wet in the middle when you roll them up. And then you've got the whole lemon sugar.
How many will you have today? Three.
I was actually going to think four, but look, maybe I should stick with three. But look, let us know. Is JD right? Is it sweet all the way and lemon and sugar? I think you are
right.
It's
blasphemous for it not to be sweet.
I think you're exactly right.
Now, I mentioned that Putin was on his feet. Believe it or not, and this is where the big lie comes in, and all propagandists involve themselves in this, he has said that Ukraine started the war. are we living in cloud cuckoo land? Anyway, he is. He said Russia is facing a very difficult time at the moment. He's delivering today's address in a very difficult context. He is defending his special military operation in Ukraine. He said troops have been working to ensure security on the country's historic lands. In other words, he's claiming Ukraine is Russia. He claims Ukrainians have been waiting for Russians to come in to help them, and his forces have done everything possible to resolve the problem in a peaceful way. My goodness. The big lie, the big liar, Vladimir Putin.
The people that know about the nuts and bolts of policing, whether it's Ballyfermot, Blackrock, Donnybrook, Connemara, Donegal, West Cork, the people who are on the ground know what's wrong. But we as an association are their collective voice, and we have not been listened to. So I think it's time for a wake-up call, and it's time for politicians and senior men to sit down with us and listen to the voice of people on the ground to tell them what's wrong or what needs to be addressed.
All right, Brendan, look, thank you very much. We've spoken to you before about Garda retention problems and early retirements and resignations and so on. Clearly, something must be done. And also numbers. I mean, we have more Garda, in theory, available to patrol our streets than we had, say, 5-6 years ago. But we also have many more specialist units who might be, you know, eating up the numbers, shall we say. Dahi Doolan, Sinn Féin councillor for Ballyfermot and Drimna. Dahi, good morning.
Good morning to you.
Another bad night for Ballyfermot, you know, where the name is writ large across the headlines and, you know, most people in Ballyfermot are not part of this.
Not at all, Pat. You're right. I'm glad to hear you say that. I mean, the young people who were involved in the scenes yesterday are a tiny, tiny minority. I don't even know if they're all from Ballyfermot. But the scenes, yes, they were unacceptable. They were wrong. It shouldn't have happened, and it casts a shadow over a family in mourning, and it's not a reflection on the family, nor is it a reflection on the young people of Ballyfermot and Cherry Orchard, and nor is it a reflection on the wider community. But unfortunately, you've Gardaí in being attacked and hospitalised, and I wish them a speedy recovery again. I wish we weren't talking about this morning, but we are. And also, it led to residents along the Kylemore Road being terrorised. And I think we need to look back. I was on your show only a few months ago after the Gardaí car was rammed in Cherry Orchard, the Gardaí attacked in November, and that led to finally the minister coming out, Helen McEntee, and making this announcement of an interagency high-level group that would manage in an interagency, cross-departmental, cross-agency manner to tackle some of these very issues we're talking about. Nothing, nothing, nothing has happened since then. And that only serves to undermine community morale and the belief in the government, in the Gardaí, and local politicians. Yeah. Now, and that's also a victim of what we saw yesterday. And we really need to turn this around. The gaze of the minister needs to return to Ballyfermot and Cherry Orchard. But we've had enough promises, enough reports, enough statements. Now really is a time for action, Pat. We have a plan in place. We have the skeleton of an interagency implementation body. We just need the government to realise that you can't limp from crisis to crisis. Yeah. You need a long-term policing, community-based plan to turn this community around. Yeah.
But also, Dahi, you know, we want the government to do everything for us. This is the way society...
I didn't say that, Pat. We want to roll up our sleeves and work with them. We have agencies lined up to work with them. The Gardaí want to work with them, but we cannot do it on our own. The Gardaí cannot police their way out of these.
No, but I'm just
thinking, we want to work with the government.
A lot of these kids are teenagers, right? They have parents. Where are the parents in all of this? I mean, when a kid goes out on a scrambler bike that is an illegal bike, that is not taxed, not insured, I mean, where's the parent?
It's unacceptable. I mean, I wouldn't let my child out on a scrambler. Tax or untaxed, it wouldn't have been a scrambler. But this underlines my very point. We cannot simply police our way out of it.
News Talk chief reporter Barry White went to Ballyfermot to speak to some of the locals after a Garda was hit by a missile last evening. Garda were there because they were putting in place what they called an information-led policing plan in advance of a large funeral.
Yeah, I think it does bring down the area because there is a lot of nice people and good people in Ballyfermot, and it's just certain people, like the way they carry on, like youngsters and everything. It's just disgraceful the way they attack them.
And it's not the first time a member of the Gardaí has been attacked here in the last few months?
No, it hasn't been the first time. They're always getting attacked doing their job.
Do you think the Gardaí need more support, particularly in this area?
Yeah, I do, yeah. Because they're only young people doing their job like everybody else, like, and everybody else has to do their job, and I mean, they shouldn't be getting attacked. I think it's all the same group, like, that are doing it, like, because they know they're getting away with it because it's not enough guard, like, you know what I mean, in the area, and they know, like, who to pick on.
Well, I think that was disgraceful.
Yeah. And just, there's a video going around of a group of young people who attacked a guard. Yeah. Who's to blame for that?
The parents. Well, that's my opinion, anyway. I think it's the parents.
Yeah.
Has to be the parents.
They have to know what they're up to.
It's not the first time a guard has been attacked in the last few months.
We went on the meeting up there that night about that.
About the other guard.
That was disgraceful as well.
Are locals getting annoyed now this is happening so often?
We don't want it. I mean, I'm Ballyfermot born and red. You know, in all my life,
I've lived in Ballyfermot. We all grew up here.
And we never had. I mean, my mother moved to Ballyfermot when I was two.
And 2 months.
2 months. So, I mean,
60 years living in
the state. You'll always get something, but not what's going on
now. Not what's going around now.
And
they're all only.
And I don't care what anyone says, their parents has to blame. They don't respect anybody. They've no respect for anybody.
It doesn't matter about the law. They don't have respect for people in general. And if you do approach them,
that's it.
You get a dig.
If you do approach them, you get a dig.
First of all, it's awful to hear a member of Angarda Síochána getting assaulted, and it's happening too frequently now, but it's been happening for the last 20 years, and in our case, it happened 12 years ago when my wife was assaulted on duty and suffered broken wrist, rib, jaw, and was jumped by youth. Youth couldn't be prosecuted because they were too young, and it was a nightmare, and it's still a nightmare because we're hearing about it. As Tara alluded to there, there's 25% of the workforce suffering post-traumatic stress because of this. This is not going away, and in fact, it's getting worse. We've advocated for cameras, even more specialised armed units to nip this in the bud, because it's lawless at the moment in Dublin and other parts of the country.
So this happened to your wife,
yes.
Joe, 12 years ago.
And she was, new to the job. She'd only served 1 or 2 years, and she was badly assaulted one night in the same region. Nothing has changed. And to be perfectly honest, given very little support, and that's why, when I hear of a member getting assaulted Tuesday, the day after the incident, and they're waking up to a nightmare, because they get a call from probably a sergeant or a superintendent, we're here for you, but at the end of the day, they're not, and nobody is. And it's the state that needs to address this, Andrea. We've got on to numerous politicians and ministers, and they just can't provide us with an answer of what they're doing, other than, this bill is coming through. This bill is coming through. It's not good enough, and it needs the heavy hand of the law needs to prevail here at the end of the day.
I can't imagine, Joe, for you when you got that call.
Yeah, it's shocking.
I'm sure it stays with you.
It does, but it's changed. It's a life changing event. It's trauma. It just doesn't go away, and people have. Great admiration for the guards, and they come and they talk about how to get into Templemore. And we actually have to say to their parents, do not let your child go down to Templemore, and do not let them join the guards.
Because of your experience.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, you're living with it, and your wife is living with it every day.
Yeah. Blue Harris retired about 3 years ago on medical grounds. The guards had no occupational health. For 2 years, she was sitting at home trying to get back to work. She was asked to take any chance she would sign herself off one station, because she was using up budgets, she was using up resources to get her a nice cushy job at a desk. And that happened. The desk wasn't fit for her injuries. Occupational went out, did an assessment. And next thing, there was no budget to get tables and chairs. So these are the stories that you don't hear.
You don't hear.
And, it's like you're injured and you're victimised when you're in the guards. You're no good to anybody, Andrea. And this is, the management is aware of this. And, I can't understand how the powers that they have, they don't get out the public order units. It needs a more high visibility approach, rather than, we all know this is going to happen at the next funeral or the next, protest. But the guards are reactive, and that's the truth of it.
It's a very hard, Joe, to disagree with a lot of your points in terms of, I suppose, and a shot to any members of the guards, they'll tell you the force has become totally reactive rather than a preventative force, and even listening to the views of many that have come in today around what happened yesterday. But is your wife, is she still a member, is she?
she was retired by Dewhurst 3 years ago, and it took a while to get retired. But it's even worse now. She's on, you know, part pension, and she's barely surviving. And the guards know this. You know, when it comes to compensation, that you're sent for this assessment after this assessment. Okay. It's a gravy train. You know, no one in the guards can make a decision. The chief state solicitors can't make decisions. The barristers love to meet because they're clocking up big fees, and it's a gravy train at the end of the day, Andrea.
But obviously, and the whole impact of what happened, and the physical and emotional toll from the injury,
the politicians will come out and say they're troubled and this is awful and oh my God. But since this has happened, nothing has been done. It's got worse.
Ireland, Brando. This for my son as well, Brando, for my mother, and also for the kids that are dreaming to be some from the area that I came from. This is for you. So
that was actually quite moving. We've just played that video to the class here for the kids in the area. How does everyone feel?
It's nice that to know that, like, he came from our school and he came from our area, and like, wherever you're from, however you are, you can do anything you want.
Young boys and girls can look up to him.
Most of the time I like watch Barry Keoghan movies, and it kind of inspires me to do better things, and he's a big idol of mine.
And he was in my youth club. He was the man in the high school musical.
Yeah, I like the way he said, like, he still is the same as he was as a kid. He still says, yup the flats and bro.
I seen the Bloody Sunday video. It was really, really, really well put together. Well edited, well acted, well directed. So big, big congrats to all the lads in 5th and 6th class. Well done to Mr. McHugh as well. And of course, Mr. Coyle, the best teacher out there. But no, honestly, great work, and I'd love to see more of that going on. Really, really fascinating. I really mean that.
So that is Barry Keoghan. He sent a message after you made a video, a Bloody Sunday video. You made a film with the kids, and he sent that message of support.
There was a competition organised by Cumann na Mon School for schools to recreate Bloody Sunday through video. So we made a video here in the school, and like, there were over 200 schools that entered the competition, but our school actually won it.
It's always great to see that someone, especially coming out of Dublin central area, who's had to get that far in life. When he said up the flat, I think it gave us all a bit of honour to see one of our own up there on the stage winning that award. Up the flats.
So this object was found when they were excavating a Roman ditch outside the fort at Vindolanda. And so that means effectively it was in a Roman rubbish tip.
Okay. And originally, what was this catalogued as?
So it was originally entered in the catalogue as a darning tool. So, you know, something for sewing socks, mittens, gloves, that sort of thing.
Mm. Is there any possible way you could mistake this for a darning tool?
Well, I mean, I'm not much of a knitter myself, so you know, I'll be honest, I'm not familiar with all the tools of darning, but in theory, it possibly could be used still for a darning tool, but I think that was what we'd call a trench side entry, or an entry from the trench, before it was cleaned up, so it was still covered in dirt and things, so it was just a quick initial identification. Once it was cleaned up and such, I think once you look at it, it's pretty self-evident that it's penis-shaped.
Yes. Does that necessarily mean it was a sex toy, or it could have been used for a number of reasons?
No, it doesn't mean it's necessarily a sex toy. What you get with, you know, Roman culture and Roman society and Greek society and culture as well is that those sort of phallic symbols are all over the place. So they get carved onto stones, they get brought into murals, they'll have statues of gods with, you know, some very massive endowments. So it has the phallus has a real symbolic, you know, magical symbolism in Roman culture. Mm. And so it could be an object which is using that phallic decoration, that phallic shape, to kind of give it a bit of a magical charge.
Yeah. Might it have been connected to something else?
It's possible. So a really good possibility is that this object is actually a pestle, you know, from a mortar and pestle set, which would be used to, you know, grind up some ingredients for food and cooking, or maybe for making a poultice or medicines, or even cosmetics, you know, makeup. And if you think about, you know, mixing those things yourself, and if the phallus is a magical symbol that lends protection or offers good luck and good fortune, then what you're doing when you're mixing is you're kind of supercharging your ingredients with that magic.
Okay.
And so that's a more mundane possibility.
But were phalluses a kind of a thing where people would have them in their homes in the Roman era, and you know, they'd be something you'd touch for good luck kind of thing?
Yeah, very much. And in fact, we have burials of children from the Roman period that have little pendants of a phallus found with them. So it's very much that protective symbol that you would adorn your children with them, much like you might a small cross today.
Yeah. Now, the fact that it's made of wood, is that unusual? Say, if it was a pestle, or if it was a sex toy, I would imagine wood mightn't be the best material for one.
Yeah, it's a very good question.
I mean, lots of people, and they'll be listening to this show, you know, working people, working families, who felt that was the measure that had the most impact on them. They're not in receipt of any social welfare payments, and that was the biggest government intervention on their side. And they see its disappearance, and they think they're left in the lurch. And they're, they're struggling with rent and mortgage interest rates increasing, and they're struggling with the cost of their fuel, which is going to go up now. Again, we'll talk about that in a moment. They're struggling with the cost of their shopping trolley going up week on week. And the big thing the government did for them, they're going to stop doing.
So understand that concern completely. If you take a step back and look at everything we've done since the cost of living crisis began to develop, we have now spent 9.4 billion euro of the country's money helping your listeners deal with rising costs, and in particular the rising cost of energy. And we were able to spend that money in the aftermath of a pandemic, when we spent tens of billions of euro in supporting our country as it had to close due to public health measures. The reason why we can do that is because Ireland has a reputation that is deserved for our public finances being safe, and that we will be responsible with them in the future. For your listeners who would have that view, and I understand why they would have, what I would say to them is that it's those people are the reason why we reduced tax for anybody earning, paying the standard rate of income tax on up to 40, on, excuse me, paying the higher rate of income tax on income above 40,000 euro in the budget. It's the reason why we brought in a renter's tax credit. It's the reason why we've put the cost of childcare. And it's also the reason why, in the measure that we've brought in today, we have brought in an additional 100 euro for those who were in receipt of child benefits.
Okay, so they're wrong to complain. You're doing a lot for them, really, aren't you?
I wouldn't ever say they are wrong to complain.
They're just
because
they're
I
misled.
Absolutely understand why they, in particular, are grappling with the cost of living. But just as it would be wrong to suggest they're complaining, it would be equally wrong to suggest that we're not doing anything to help them.
No, I wouldn't say they're not
and
doing
just
anything. I just
the
maybe
point
they
that
feel
that are helping.
And I can find people who say you're not doing anything, but let's be honest. Most people, I think, who are complaining would acknowledge that there have been interventions. But again, that the most significant intervention they see ending, and then those people who, for example, can't afford to live in Dublin, but their job is in Dublin and they have to commute, they look at the other measure today, the phasing out of subsidies for petrol and diesel, and they think it's going to get more expensive for them to work by the end of the summer than it is today.
But we are phasing out that measure because the surge in prices that we saw in petrol and diesel across last year, that surge, there's growing evidence to say that is beginning to moderate as we move through the year. We brought in place very, very significant excise reductions as the price of petrol and diesel went through the roof. I know it is still high, but it is not as high as it was a year ago when we brought in the excise reductions. And ultimately, the commuters that you are talking about, we are using their money to cut the price of fuel. And I have to be able to give them confidence that in the time ahead, we can still make good use of their money. And their money can be used to fund better public services. Their money can be used to continue to make changes in taxation. Their money can be used to cut the cost of childcare. And ultimately, we can only get to the point of doing those things if we begin to slowly reduce measures that were brought in as emergency measures when the price of petrol and diesel went well above €2 over a number of weeks and then for a month. And that is why, while I do appreciate the difficulty that this could cause, ultimately the reason why we can announce a package today of over €1 billion after everything else we've done with your listeners' money is because we do try to be sensible and make affordable choices with that money while acknowledging that we can't do everything.
And is there a calculation as well that things could get bad again at the other end of the summer, into the autumn and into the winter, and that the government needs to keep some money back for further intervention?
That risk is there, Ciarán.